We'll soon be enveloped in that shit, Leeson said. He came to stand next to us. There's another outlet over there. Looking north, I saw what he meant. Another spot was gushing out dark vapors. This can't be good, I said. Harris, in case we all have to come down into that pipe with you, tell me what you found.
Found Toro. She's been shredded. Looks like the same drones that attacked us.
Roger that. Push in until you find the way out.
That might not be a good idea, Centurion, he said.
I'm seeing a grate ahead, thick bars, no way through.
Blow it up, cut it away, do your job.
He grumbled, but he pushed further. I got his helmet feed now, as Keevy's setup was finally working right. I could see what he saw. The situation was grim. There weren't just a few finger-thick bars of steel in the way. The grate in question was more like a perimeter fence on a fire base. Each bar was as thick as a sapling and as black as cast iron. He shoved aside panicky recruits, attached a charge to the central bar, and ordered his people to retreat. That's when they got him. Those drone bugs slithered right under the bars in large numbers through the gaps. The bars were spaced perfectly for those critters to slide through while a man couldn't get more than an arm deep. The light troopers blazed away with their snap rifles, but that just set up a deadly splattering pattern of ricochets in the pipe. Harris, in the meantime, was pinned by two drones that clamped on his boots, and six more that crawled over his armor, chewing up hoses and fabric wherever they found it. He roared and cursed the whole time, and I didn't blame him.
Centurion, I need help, he called out.
Harris, I said, I can see the charge is set. Blow those bars.
I can't get out of range, sir.
I know that, damn it. You recruits get out of there. Run for your lives. Harris's gloves were coming apart now. They were woven mesh, but those drones had teeth like buzzsaws. They got through his left gauntlet, spraying blood all over the place.
You're dead anyway, Harris, I said. I order you to blow that grate.
I hate you, McGill, he said in a labored voice.
Then the signal cut out. A blast of soot and dust shot out the service duct at our end. Harris was on a one-way trip back up to the transport. The last of the surviving light troopers came rushing back out of the duct a minute later. They were injured and desperate. Sarah was among them. Seeing her crawl over alien rocks made me feel sorry for her. The faceplate on her helmet was cracked, and she was choking on the toxic atmosphere that was getting in. Walking up to the last of them, I nodded.
You did well, I said.
We didn't do shit, Sarah coughed.
Our weapons were useless, and most of us died like rats in a trap.
That's right, I told her. But you followed orders. That's appreciated. You saved the lives of others who are advancing after you, too. You are a crucial part of this battle. She said something, but it was drowned out by a desperate coughing fit. Deciding that now was as good a time as any, I executed her and her companions. They all had ruptured suits. It was only a matter of time before they died, and we didn't have time to do any babysitting. Standing up again, I ordered my troops to gather round.
Attach lines, I said. That vapor will be here shortly.
What if it's acidic? Carlos asked. What if it eats our suits?
Then we're screwed, I told him. It took a few minutes for everyone to hook up. Our suits were equipped with filament lines with clips at the end. They could be used to attach troops to one another. Usually, we used them on worlds that had no light or any kind of dense atmosphere. They allowed us to communicate and find one another without vision or other sensory input. Before we'd even managed to hook everyone up, the black cloud of dense smoke roiled over us. It looked like the kind of thing an oil fire would emit. It absolutely erased our vision.
Natasha, I called out. Analysis on this smoke? What have you got?
It's not breathable, she called back.
No shit?
It's not corrosive, but it is adhesive. I think it's meant to coat us with a dense film.
Already, I could see what she was talking about. I took a step and I almost fell.
It's some kind of slippery substance.
A fine aerogel. Clingy, slippery, sensory clogging.
I tried to wipe it away, but it was pointless.
All right, people, I said. We're going into that damned pipe. I'll lead the way.
Having started off near the entrance, I felt around until I found it. Others crowded behind me, complaining and bumping into one another. A few of them became disoriented and weren't able to get attached to anyone else.
"This stuff is preventing my sensors from operating,"
Kiwi complained.
"Not even sonar penetrates it."
"That's why we've snapped lines on. Let's go inside." I tried to contact Graves, but the radio was out. Crawling into the service duct, I felt a profound sense of claustrophobia. It's one thing to crawl into a sewer pipe, but it's quite another to do so when you can't see a damn thing. Once I was in a ways, it widened out and I was able to almost stand. Behind me, my troops were tugging on the line as they fumbled their way in my direction. "Come on, come on," I called out to them. "Quit playing with yourselves and get in here."
"How's it look down there, sir?" Carlos asked.
"It's great, like a picnic on a sunny beach."
"That's what I thought."
I wiped an area on my faceplate repeatedly until I was able to see through the gunk. It was like having dirty oil smeared over your windshield, but with my suit lights on and wiped in a similar fashion, it was better than nothing. Crawl space was littered with dead troopers and fried drones. Apparently the drones curled back up into balls when they died. I kicked them out of the way. The number of troops I'd lost down here, it was a crying shame. I told myself that if I ever commanded a legion, I'd flatten any dome full of rebels I met up with and damn the casualties. Behind me, the crawl space began to fill up. About 10 of us got inside before something else went terribly wrong. Near the end of the chain was Carlos. He'd managed to crawl inside, and he'd just begun to wipe his faceplate clear.
"You're right, sir,"
he told me.
"This is like heaven in here."
He grinned, but then his line went taut behind him. It jumped, and so did he, jerking backward a foot or so. He threw out his arms to catch hold of anything he could.
"Shit, damn, something is yanking on my six."
"Leeson," I shouted, "what's going on out there?"
"I don't know, Centurion, but something just drew hard on our line. Maybe a vehicle hit our last man. There's been no gunfire, but I'm showing yellow circles on my HUD."
I activated the full unit locator, and the inside of my helmet filled with graphic data. I didn't always use the system, as it was distracting in combat, but when you couldn't see anyway, it was more useful. I saw right off that several of our people were dead outside, or I could hope they were out of contact and just reading dead on my HUD.
"Has the line been cut?"
I demanded.
"Sound off. Who have we got out there who can tell me?"
That's about as far as I got before the filament connecting all of us jumped again. This time, Carlos was sucked right out of the service duct along with the next two guys in the sequence. Everyone looked shocked, and we heard horrible noises being broadcast by the troopers outside. Screams, gurgles, and puffing, desperate breaths. I'm not much good at complicated plans, but I do take action when it's appropriate. I rammed my way past several troops, banging them down on their backsides and into the walls of the pipe. I reached the man I was looking for. He clung desperately with a failing two-handed grip to an uneven spot on the tunnel wall. The tether behind him was as tight as a piano wire. I had my combat knife in my hand. He looked up at me in shock, sure I was about to kill him. I grabbed for the slack line between us and held it up. I bid the man a solemn nod and shrugged as I cut the filament through, the ends slithering out of my hand. The poor bastard looked back and forth at the two pieces falling and then snapped away, vanishing with tremendous speed into the utter blackness behind him.
Chapter 29.
"What the hell was that?"
Kiwi demanded. She was clinging on to me. That wasn't like Kiwi. We'd faced death together any number of times, and she could be as tough as nails. She didn't like dying, don't get me wrong, but she'd never seemed so afraid of it before. She just kept staring into the black, roiling smoke outside. It wasn't coming into the crawl space with us. Possibly there was an air pressure difference that was pushing it back. "Specialist," I told her sternly. "You're a tech. Re-establish communication with the rest of my unit."
"Right. Okay,"
she said, letting go of my arm and working on her tapper. Techs had tools the rest of us didn't have. They carried a rucksack full of devices and a better computer than any tapper. She said as I gathered up the last handful of troops I had with me and headed toward the bars where Harris had last reported in.
McGill, I can't raise anyone. Either that smoke is interfering with our communications or they're all dead.
Vital signs? I demanded. Anything? She shook her head.
Nothing. Not even dead red location markers. We're cut off from fleet and the unit.
Should we go back outside and look for them? Asked one of the heavies. Nah, I said. If they're alive, they'll make it in here. If not, well, we have to press on. We can't afford to lose this precious ground. Our mission is to penetrate the dome and knock out any power source we can locate. The whole team went quiet. They looked at me like I was insane. That was nothing new for me, mind you, but it annoyed me just the same. Come on now, I said. This is Legion Varus. We're not some hog outfit. Sure, we're probably going to die, but I'm not going to hunker down in here and wait for it. No one said a thing. Their bravado was spent. I understood. Historically, there were very few outfits that didn't break and run long before they reached a 50% loss rate. You couldn't help it. Even if you wanted to be brave, the back of your mind kept doing the math and declaring you a loser. Let's get this over with, I told them, taking point. At least we might get a chance to roast one of those skinny friggers. Harris's body was strewn over the deck, partially draped over the jagged bars he'd blown apart in his last suicidal act. The drones that had been chewing on him lay scattered all around the place. Pick up some extra charging pods, I told them. Who knows, maybe we'll get a chance to shoot something. We made quick time after the broken gate, and shortly came upon a round blue disk of light. Before advancing further, I made another fruitless attempt to contact Primus Graves. I wiped my view clear one more time and advanced. Coming out of the pipe and into the dome proper, I looked around. My rifle was up to my faceplate. VAC helmets always made it harder to handle a rifle, but we were trained for it. Clear! I called back to the team after looking around cautiously. They advanced, timidly, into the open space behind me. The area under the dome was impressive. As I'd expected, the light here had a bluish cast to it. There were buildings nearby. They got bigger and bigger in a stair-step formation as they moved away from us. The largest buildings were under the peak of the dome, almost scraping it. Those nearby were necessarily squatty. The weirdest thing was the smoke outside. It encircled the dome completely, reaching about 10 meters up the side of the dome on every flank. We were in a sea of inky darkness, but the sky overhead could still be seen. The power truck we'd seen earlier was still parked nearby, but no one was around to drive it. I found the first of the enemy dead, a few meters off.
Looks like this guy was killed when Harris set off his bomb, Keevy said.
Yeah, looks like. Keevy, get into that power truck and try to get it running. She did so, effortlessly, and we climbed in. The power truck was bigger than a pickup truck, but there wasn't enough room in the cab for everyone. The troops in the back had their rifles balanced on the basket-like rim that surrounded a flat bed. I wasn't sure that going for a ride in the truck was a good thing or not, but it stood to reason that we'd be pinpointed by their security no matter what. I figured we might as well move fast and have a look around before they sprung their next trap on us. We headed into the center of the city without hesitation. I drove because I pretty much knew everyone else was going to take their time. Squeezing what appeared to be an accelerator rod, I had the machine revving down streets and shaking as it made hard, random turns. The streets were deserted and quiet. If I hadn't known there were people here watching for us, plotting to kill us, I'd have thought the place was abandoned.
Where are we going? Keevy demanded.
We've got to put some distance between us and the original scene of the crime, I told her. Haven't you ever run from the cops before? She looked at me in shock and shook her head. Have you got anything on your radio yet?
Yes, she said. That black vapor was definitely interfering with our transmissions. We can talk to the ship if you'd like.
I didn't like, but I pulled over and shot a beam up to Nostrum. To my surprise, Graves himself answered.
McGill, he asked. Are you still in the field? What's your status?
Yeah, I'm down here all right. I'm inside the dome.
That's great. Yes, we're getting location data on you now. There's a power station about 200 meters south of you. Head that way and have your weaponeers knock it out.
I said, looking around at my handful of troops. We're fresh out of weaponeers, Primus. I've got 4 heavies and 1 tech left.
Shit. All right. You have to try anyway.
You got it, sir. We'll do it or die in the attempt. Just one thing. How'd you get back up aboard Nostrum?
I died, of course, he said, sounding irritated.
Right, sir, but your command unit was way back in the mountains. How'd they get to you?
That thick vapor you see outside is hiding an enemy force of automated defense vehicles.
Hiding what, sir? I asked.
Crab things. Some kind of biological combat system. They use the cover of the vapor to approach our units and destroy most of our troops. We've lost a lot of good equipment down there today.
That was classic Graves. He considered human bodies to be cheap and easily replaced. A good rifle, however, was another matter entirely. A gun or a spacesuit was harder to replicate than a soldier, and that made such things more valuable to him. We followed his directions and made it to a building that was pyramid-shaped. We climbed out of the truck and approached the structure with our weapons at the ready. They can't use black smoke and giant robots on us in here, I told them. They don't want to wreck their precious living environment.
I have to admit, Kiwi said, I'm starting to want to blow a hole in this dome and finish them all.
Yeah, I don't blame you, Specialist, but we've got orders. Take down that door.
As my tech, she approached and tried it first. It was locked, and hacking it turned out to be hopeless.
Good security, she commented.
That's why I said take it down. Do we have to use plasma rifles, or do you have a better trick in that bag of yours?
She made a face at me and pulled a small charge out of her rucksack. She stuck it to the door bolt, backed up, and set it off. Maybe the enemy had been waiting for this moment, watching and hoping a sealed, hardened door would stop us. But the second we knocked it down, they sprang up and went for broke. They fired a shower of accelerated rounds down at us from every neighboring building. They'd come out of nowhere from our point of view. The buildings had no windows, but they did. They weren't there 1 minute, then the next, they were all over the place. Fire-colored tracers streaked down, connecting my troops with the muzzles of enemy weapons now and then. Many missed, but several of my last troopers got hit. 2 of them lived through the initial barrage, and we all returned fire. The good news was the enemy had no armor. They weren't the best shots in the world, either. 5, 10, 15 of them went down while we blazed back plasma bolts and ducked for cover.
Science nerds my ass,
Kiwi exclaimed, ducking down under the power truck with me.
These guys are fighters. We should put them down right now.
Agreed. When I'm a Tribune, this kind of bullshit will end. All the resources we have at our disposal, and here we are dicking around in a firefight under this dome.
She gave me a brief, searching look.
What makes you think you'll be a Tribune someday?
It has to happen. Nothing would make Harris angrier.
Kiwi chuckled and returned fire again. I could tell by my unit vitals we only had 2 other men left, and they were hugging the big wheels. It was really hard to have a firefight with people up above you, especially while you're lying under a truck. Just ask anyone who's done it. Although they'd lost their initial element of surprise, I could see we weren't going to win this. They were pulling up vehicles now, makeshift power trucks with high-powered guns mounted on the back of them. These blazed away, damaging the power truck we hid under. It might not run anymore by the look of it. A trickle of fluids came down from the engine, staining my already smeared faceplate.
We've got to make a break for the building, I said.
We can't, she said. It's too far, too open.
I glanced over to my right and I saw what she meant. The door hung open, but it was a good 10 meters away. That was too far by half with all the incoming fire raining down on us.
Here's the deal, I told her. I'm getting into the pilot's seat and I'm ramming that wall. Crawl fast and go under the truck to the doorway. You're not sending me? She asked. Why would you want to die that way?
You've got the bombs in your ruck, I pointed out. Move! Everyone else covering fire!
The last troops I had that could lift a rifle
poked their noses out and shot at the enemy wildly on full auto. We didn't hit much, but we made them duck. These rogues had seen a lot of losses on their side already, and they might not even be trained to fight. I got into the pilot seat and rammed forward the power bar. Cranking the steering mechanism to the right, I slammed the power truck into the smoldering doorway. Along the way, unfortunately, I felt a hard bounce as I went over something solid. It could only be a body, one of my troopers. I hoped that was one of our dead. If it was one of my last survivors, it better not be Kiwi. She'd be mad at me for years. Regardless, I scrambled out of the truck and rushed the door. I didn't make it. To be honest, I hadn't really expected to make it. A bio round caught me in the back and dropped me straight on my hands and knees. This one had gone through my armor. I saw the exit at the edge of my shoulder plate. Maybe it had hit a weak spot that had been hit before, I wasn't sure. It didn't really matter. I was lanced through, a sensation I knew all too well. Getting hit by a hot bolt rather than a solid kinetic like a bullet caused a very different kind of wound. The heat burned you clean through. There wasn't as much bleeding because the vessels were cauterized to ash. But it wasn't a pleasant way to go down. The tissue damage was tremendous, making more of your body non-functional immediately. Knocked off my feet onto my face, I scrambled up, or tried to. Blood ran down, and the left side of my body didn't work so good. My arm dangled loosely, and I had to lever myself up with my right. Fortunately, my right side was up to the task, and my rifle was attached to my suit. Crawling, my armor took several more hits in the back as I made it under the vehicle, and then into the power station. I took a second to look back. Kiwi was dead in the street. I'd be damned if that power truck hadn't run right over her. Checking my HUD, I saw the others were dead red, too. Cursing, I didn't about-face to go get her rucksack, but I knew it was no good. For one thing, the enemy was cautiously approaching from every side now. For another thing, Kiwi's ruck was crushed under the same wheel that pinned down her broken spine. Not knowing what else to do, I staggered into the dark building and managed to get square onto my feet. A few twisty passages and rooms led me to something that looked important. It was a glowing light surrounded by water. A Geiger counter on the wall indicated dangerous levels of radiation. These rogues might have evolved over time to take more rads than we could. Not seeing anything else to do, I shot the glass encasement, hoping to rupture it. To my surprise, it broke, releasing a spray of hot steam. As my faceplate had cracked and my suit was no longer in one piece, I was good and seared by that heat. I did a little screaming, but I kept firing until my rifle was empty. Lying on the floor to avoid any more steam, I tried to ram another charging pod into my weapon. It was harder than it should have been. I knew I was dying, and my fingers were fumbling. Doing it with one hand was damn near impossible. A face loomed close to me then. It was a female face. She was lovely. So long and thin, with high cheekbones, like a fashion model back home. She had eyes that were tight slits, a small mouth, a long neck, and long hair. To me, she looked very human, but almost surreal. It could have been my blood loss, but I didn't think so. Why do skinny women look so much better to me than skinny men? I don't know, but they do. "You're lovely," I croaked at her. She pointed a rifle at me and crept closer. Her face took on a curious expression.
"You live?"
she asked, speaking with a soft, sing-song voice.
"Do you yield?"
"Yield? You mean give up?" I laughed at that. Blood bubbled out of me as I did so. "No. Legion Varus people never give up. I'll die now, but I'll just come back tomorrow and finish the job."
"The Techsmiths simply wish to work unhindered to further our research," she informed me.
As she spoke, I noticed some sort of badge bearing crazy symbols on her clean white garment. and wondered if it was her name or title or maybe some company logo.
"Why would you work so hard to end us?"
she asked. "End you? We're just trying to get you off planet, to evacuate your people, if possible." She shook her head bitterly.
"No,"
she said.
"We have devices. We talked to those who agreed to leave, but now they are no more."
That made me frown. Damn it. I knew my people. I knew the Hogs, including their leaders and those above them who ruled all of Earth. The decision-makers back home were perfectly capable of such deceit and cruelty. "I'm sorry about that," I said, "if it's true."
"Will you stop your madness, then?"
she asked. "No."
"But why? We did not expect you to get this far. Such determination. Why fight and die just to kill us?"
"Because," I said, my words interrupted by a disturbing gurgle. Air was beginning to form up around my lungs inside my chest. Soon I knew I wouldn't be able to breathe at all, but that didn't matter much. "Because of the Galactics," I told her. "They will erase all the human worlds if they find out what you've done here."
"Ah,"
she said, brightening.
"You've spoken the first words I've heard from a human that I actually believe. All of it makes sense if you are acting out of fear."
"We are," I said. "We always do. My apologies."
"It's all right. I must apologize as well. We all have unpleasant acts we must perform."
Then she shot me dead in the eye. I couldn't blame her for that. In some ways, it was a relief. Chapter 30. When I came out of the revival machine, I wasn't angry. I was reflective. I was still thinking of the tall, dreamlike woman I'd met and the things she'd said. After escaping the prodding of the bio people, I headed for the Tribune's office. I skipped right by Graves, even though I knew that was rude. Graves was in my direct chain of command, but I knew that telling him about what I'd learned would earn me nothing more than a shrug from him. He'd gladly put out a dozen blazing suns, freezing over planets teeming with people, in order to keep Earth safe. Hell, he'd do it just to nudge the odds in our favor. Death meant little to him. It was only fools like me, in his view, that went around trying to find a less severe way to do things. Before I could reach Tribune Deech, however, I had to get past Winslade. He personally intercepted me as I stepped foot onto Gold Deck.
"And what business might you have here, Centurion?" he demanded.
Winslade stood with his hands behind his back, no doubt clasped together. I suspected he might have a needler back there as well, hidden in his palm. "Hello, Primus," I said. "I've got a report to make." His eyes became narrower and even more rat-like than usual.
"Is that so? Under whose orders?"
"By order of Tribune Deech, of course." Winslade gave me an unpleasant chuckle.
"Nice try, McGill. But I know you're lying.
Did you know she visited my quarters the night before the drop?" His snide demeanor faltered for a second. Normally a man in his position would laugh off such an assertion, but he knew that I'd had a very special and very inappropriate relationship with Turov when she'd been running the show.
"That simply isn't possible," he snapped. "I would have known about it."
"Impossible, huh? Just as unlikely as you managing to weasel your way into the graces of yet another high-ranking officer?" At the mention of his weaseling, his eyes flashed with dark anger. His hand came around from behind his back. He was quick and sneaky, but I was ready for him. I caught his hand with mine and clamped onto him.
"Let go of my hand, Centurion," he said angrily.
"What? Sorry, sir. I thought you wanted to shake."
As I said these words, I squeezed his hand for all I was worth. His face changed from rage to pain in a single moment. Then I heard a crackling sound. For a second, I thought maybe I'd broken a bone, but I quickly realized it was something else. When I let go of his hand, there was blood and a small, crushed device between our hands. The wrecked needler was no bigger than a 50-credit piece. They tended to be a little delicate. I smiled as the broken weapon clattered onto the deck between us. My grip had crushed it. They were built to be hidden, not endure abuse. Apparently one could say the same thing of Winslade's hand. He shook it and cursed me through his clenched teeth.
Insubordinate little—
Well, Primus, it sure is lucky that weapon didn't go off unexpectedly. One of us might have gotten hurt.
I'll have you arrested and permed, he shouted furiously. You can't assault a superior officer on this ship, McGill.
That would be a mighty big mistake, sir, I assured him. I'm liable to confess all my sins if I get arrested now. That would be a crying shame. There are plenty of experiences you and I have shared in our checkered past, which I think we'd both rather leave forgotten. He glowered at me, but after a moment, a look of alarm crept into his expression. After that, he narrowed his eyes again with a new, sneaky thought.
Wait, what are you talking about? No one would believe you. All those claims of treachery and collusion, they were all disproven years ago at hearings on Earth.
I'm sure they were, I said. But there might be proof of contradictions. Facts are stubborn things, Primus. There may be a few out there you wouldn't care to have come to light. The truth was Winslade was guilty of a raft of crimes, most of which I was no doubt unaware of. But he knew all the things he'd buried over the years. He also knew that if I was going down, there was no reason for me to keep quiet, even if I implicated myself.
Very well,
he snarled, clutching his hand.
Go talk to Deitch. You'll get nowhere. She makes Turov seem angelic by comparison.
As I passed him by and made my way through the passages of Gold Deck, I had to admit I agreed with Winslade on one point. Turov was much better looking than Deitch.
Centurion McGill, she said as I entered her office. Fancy meeting you here. I've heard quite a number of stories about you since our last encounter.
All good, I trust, I said, looking around her office.
Some of them were. Some were quite the opposite.
You could tell a lot about an officer by the look of their office. Tribune Drusus had adorned the walls with the heads of slain enemy aliens, trophies from a dozen campaigns on faraway planets. Graves always sat in the center of his steel box. He didn't believe in fancy-ass decorations, just tactical maps and other practical tools of war. Deitch was different. Her office held plaques, awards, and gaudy star maps. These items were proudly presented, and each one indicated some kind of step in her career. This woman was a bona fide go-getter and a legend in her own mind. Huh, I said and walked over to finger a tiny purplish globe. If I didn't know better, I'd say this was Ross G., a misty world full of swampy principalities.
Very discerning, McGill.
Didn't you serve with the Iron Eagles originally? Deitch assumed a posture of rigid pride.
I did indeed. Ross G. was one of our top assignments. No warlord was ever assassinated under my watch.
Nodding, I pretended to be impressed. Iron Eagles, Victrix, and Germanica were all prissy legions, in my opinion. In years past, they'd like to operate as color guards. Usually they'd spent years following some lordling around to impress other local petty tyrants on one planet or another. Those times had passed all of us by, of course. We were all hard-fighting outfits now, but she seemed nostalgic for the old days. Deitch watched me as I poked at her trophies. Since she didn't demand I state my business, I kept exploring her office. "Looky here," I said. This is from the Galactics.
My greatest possession, she said pridefully. A plaque from the Core Worlds, commending the service of the Iron Eagles.
I whistled at that. The only attention I'd ever gotten from a galactic was the negative kind, as in an official demand that I be executed.
"Have you ever met the Magua in person, Tribune?"
I asked her.
"I've never had the pleasure."
"Well, I have. Several times. They're kind of snotty. They don't like it out in the provinces. They call us dark worlders."
Deitch stared at me. I took a glance and saw her mouth was slightly open, and she had the kind of squint to her eyes that indicated she wasn't sure if she believed me or not.
"Anyways," I said, "I'm here to report to you what I learned down on Rogue World."
"Something, I trust, that would be so critical you thought it was worth bypassing Graves to tell me about it?"
"Exactly. I learned this whole invasion is a waste of time. We should just bomb the planet now and cut our losses."
Deitch frowned at me. "Are you accustomed to making large-scale strategic decisions for your superior officers?"
"As a matter of fact, that's come up before," I admitted. "Please hear me out before you dismiss me." Then I told her what the lady scientist from the dome had told me. The scientists were fighting because previous Earth ships had promised to rescue them, but ditched them in space instead. I didn't know if these cold facts would matter or not to Deitch, but I figured I might as well give it a try.
"That's very interesting," she replied. "But the Magua fleet is coming directly here. You knew about that, didn't you?"
"Yes, sir," I said, my heart sinking. Her lack of surprise in response to my story told me two things. First off, she already knew, and secondly, she didn't care.
"Think, McGill, why would they travel directly here rather than stopping off at Earth to question our officials?"
Maybe they want to catch us in the act of developing illegal tech out here?"
"Exactly," she said. "Now, if we don't care about these rogue scientists, what possible reason might we have for taking such great care not to destroy the dome?"
"Maybe we want to steal their data core or something." She smiled.
"This has been an interesting chat. I thank you for your report and the tenacious way you brought it to me. Next time, it would be more helpful if you brought me something I truly needed to know instead."
I was starting to feel like I was in the principal's office. "Just one more thing, sir," I said. "If we do find what we're looking for, will we let those lab folks live after that? I mean, maybe we can talk them into giving it up for their own safety."
"An interesting and very charitable idea. Unfortunately, we can't really afford to have thousands of angry civilians carrying around information that could get Earth erased. Can we now?"
"Right. Thanks for being so honest with me."
"You're welcome, Centurion. Dismissed."
I left her office, my mind whirling. Everything the lady on the planet had told me was true. The brass had lied to the troops again. But that was nothing unusual in my legion. In fact, it was downright commonplace. But no one really likes genocide, not even the perpetrator. What my mind was chewing on now was the idea that something else could be worked out. I kept thinking of that unearthly, fine-looking runway model down there on the planet below. Sure, she'd offed me without a qualm, but she'd done it for a good cause. I felt like I could reason with her if I was given half a chance. It was more than I could say about my own people.
Chapter 31 Winslade hadn't kept quiet. While I was talking to Tribune Deitch, he ratted me out to Graves. By the time I got back to my quarters, there was a note on my tapper. It was red and blinking. "Report to the Primus immediately," I read out loud. A few more of my unit's troops had been revived by then. One of them was Natasha, another was Carlos. As we weren't under attack in space, the algorithm had queued up the senior non-coms first. Carlos was helping out with the revives and deciding who should be recycled in case there was a bad grow. Natasha was reviewing our CAM data to see what had gone so horribly wrong.
"Natasha," I said, "come with me. We're going to see Graves."
She joined me as we headed to the cohort command office. Gold Deck was reserved for fleet types and Legion brass. A Primus like Graves was on the borderline in this situation. Depending on his assignment, he might get an office on Gold Deck like Winslade had, or he might not. Since he was involved in direct combat ops, he'd been assigned to a cube just like we had.
Centurion McGill, he said when I reached his cold steel walls. Fancy seeing you here, instead of running around over the top of my head.
Huh? Oh, right, sir, sorry about that. Deech asked me to report anything funny I found on the planet.
His demeanor changed. He had been reviewing summarized video of enemy capabilities from Natasha's vast collection of vids. Every trooper had cameras on their suits, but they generated too many hours of material for any one person to watch them all. It fell to techs like her to create highlights of the interesting stuff for the officers. Graves stood up and gave me a stern glare.
McGill, I'm not going down this road with you again. You're not to bother the Tribune with any wild, harebrained scheme you come up with.
I swear on my mama's grave that I would never even consider such an action.
Your mother's alive, McGill.
I didn't realize you took such an interest, Primus. I'm honored.
He heaved a sigh.
Look, he said, when it comes to Deech, keep your pants on and your mouth shut. Is that clear?
Crystal, sir. Wouldn't have it any other way. Natasha and Graves exchanged glances, and I could tell neither one of them trusted me. I wasn't sure if that was something to be proud of or not.
All right, Graves said. As the Tribune hasn't complained to me personally, I'm going to assume you haven't set her off into a rage yet. You have your instructions. You're going back down with the first lifter in the morning. Assemble your troops.
We're going down again, sir? What's our mission this time?
He frowned at me.
What have you been doing all day? You were revived 2 hours ago. Check your logs, man. Tactical plans were distributed before those new lungs of yours took their first breath.
Oh, that. Okay, Primus. I hadn't time yet to review the documents.
Well, do so. There will be no general briefing. We're going down, setting up a fire base on the mountains above that damned dome, and we're going to take it. I don't care if every civvy inside dies in the process.
I nodded without argument. I knew personally that Deech didn't care if they all died either. Apparently that might well make her mission easier.
McGill, Graves went on. Your first unit action ended in a full wipe. Not a single survivor crawled out of that dome. Don't you want to avenge yourself and your troops?
It's a little more complicated than that, I said.
How so?
Natasha cleared her throat then. We both looked at her.
I might be able to help clarify, she said, using her tapper to scroll through countless vids.
She took us to the end point, a few moments before I was killed by that rogue lab chief under the dome. The imagery flashed up on the walls, and we all stared at it. Graves snorted when he heard her soft voice and saw her fine-boned face.
Really, McGill? He asked. You found an alien girlfriend? It doesn't even matter to you that these people viciously slaughtered your entire unit.
She had her reasons, sir, I said. You should listen to what she says. I mean, I don't agree with her, but I can't understand.
He reached out and made a snuffing gesture with his hand. The vid faded and vanished.
I don't need to, he said. What I need is your assurance that you can complete your mission.
It takes a long time for a man like me to get mad, usually. But Graves was doing the trick today. Even Natasha was pissing me off. She shouldn't have played that vid and gotten Graves sniffing down the wrong track.
Primus Graves, I said loudly.
Sir, how many other units were assigned to penetrate the dome?
3,
he said. And how many managed it, sir?
Just one. Yours.
I nodded. That should tell you all you need to know, I said. The other teams might have had more survivors, but we came closer to accomplishing our mission. We're the only ones that got in there. We reached the power plant, and I damn near shut it down myself.
He tipped his head back thoughtfully for a moment.
You did more than that. You did knock it out for about 2 hours. Rupturing the cooling jacket did the trick.
Then I rest my case.
Mission accomplished, sir. He sighed.
All right. You did well. The other units chickened and were devoured by the machines inside that black vapor. I'm just never certain how things will go when I deploy you into the field, McGill. It's a crapshoot every time.
I'll take that as a compliment, sir.
You're dismissed, Centurion, and read those damn tacticals.
Will do, sir, I swear it. On the way out, I felt like strangling Natasha, but I controlled myself. You've got a new duty to perform, Specialist, I told her. Read all these tactical docs. Summarize and brief me before midnight tonight.
Tonight?
She asked. Damn right, I said. We drop in the morning.
But I've got thousands of hours of suit vids to review.
Take a stim, I suggested. Make Kiwi help, and give her a stim, too. Hell, everybody gets a stim.
Sir, is this because I embarrassed you by showing Graves that vid of the girl?
Not at all, I said. I'm neither petty nor vindictive. I'd no more do such a thing than you would. Natasha looked sullen. She knew I was calling her jealous as well as petty and vindictive. Clearly, she was still hauling around some baggage from our past relationship.
Point taken, Centurion, she said.
May I be excused? I've got a lot of work to do. Get going. She trotted off and I watched her run. She had a nice shape to her. She'd lost some of her tone over the last year or so on Earth, but dying had been good for her. She'd regained her old body in top condition. Sometimes we all had to look at the bright side of death. Along about midnight, Natasha returned with her summary. I'd been sipping synthetic whiskey and relaxing, but I managed to stash the bottle before she walked in. Her hair was a mess. She looked like she'd been running the palm of her hand through her bangs. She looked tired, but triumphant.
You were meant to spend all day on this. It's a full dossier, she told me.
I nodded, keeping my face neutral. I realized that she'd mistakenly read the whole thing. That would include orders and plans for the entire cohort. As a Centurion, I was only responsible for reading my own unit's mission plan, or maybe others I was likely to come into direct contact with. Sensing that telling her that now would be another mistake, I listened as she described the briefing. She did a great job.
Okay, I said when she was done. We're dropping at dawn on the biggest rock formation that overlooks the dome. We'll try to probe, to bait them into doing some of their tricks. We'll destroy their defensive machine and biologicals, then invade when the vapor disperses about an hour later.
That's the gist of it, she admitted. But you got all those other details, didn't you?
Certainly, I said. I've committed them all to memory. You did fine work here, Natasha, above and beyond. Why don't you take the rest of the night off? You can process the vids from our first action later. There won't be any time for the troops to review them tonight anyway. She looked troubled by that, but she smiled gratefully.
Okay, she said.
Then she frowned at me and cocked her head.
Do I smell alcohol?
I grinned. Drop of it? Yes, I admitted. Revealing the squeeze bottle, I poured her a dollop and handed it over. She looked at it dubiously and sniffed it like a cat with a new food dish.
Is this stuff safe to drink?
It's sterile, if that's what you mean. She actually took a probe from her kit and dipped it into the cup. I shook my head as she read the chemical analysis. Natasha always had been the smartest girl in the unit. She was more of a brain than an emotional type, but she could be both under the right circumstances. Finally, when she was satisfied she wouldn't be poisoned, she sipped the drink. Making a face, she sipped some more. We talked, and a few minutes later I gave her a fresh cup. That was it. After that, she was stone drunk. I was getting pretty happy myself. We laughed and made sloppy love about an hour later. It felt just like going home again.
I missed you,
she said when she was lying on my bare chest.
I missed you too,
I said, and I meant it.
Are we going to die again tomorrow?
I hesitated, but I didn't see any advantage in holding back the truth from her now.
Yeah, probably.
She heaved a sigh after that and went to sleep.
Chapter 32. The next day was even more of a shit show than usual. I didn't even get a solid night's sleep. Usually before a drop, they fed us well and let the food settle in our guts an hour or so before we boarded the lifters. Sometimes, if the ride was expected to be especially rough, they'd just give us this disgusting liquid protein stuff and some motion sickness patches. Today was different. About an hour after we were supposed to be awakened by the ship's computer, a klaxon went off. "What the hell?" I asked, heaving myself up to a sitting position. Natasha was an experienced soldier by now. She rolled off of me, sat on the floor, and started working her tapper, hangover and all. Yawning and pulling on my boots, I saw the floor light up. "Uh-oh," I said. "Looks like an alert. What's on the feed?"
"We're under attack."
Now that surprised me. The rogues had shown they were resourceful, but I hadn't figured them for the kind who might be able to strike at us up here in orbit. "What have we got?" I asked.
"Some kind of missiles are incoming."
"Damn it, I hope they don't wreck this nice ship. We're still breaking it in."
"Orders, Centurion?"
I pointed at the flashing arrows on the floor. Every recruit knew they were to follow them in an emergency. "We're a combat team, so we follow the red ones." Kicking it into gear, we suited up and grabbed our rucks. Fortunately, legionnaires were permanently packed. The smart ones even kept their toothpaste ready for action. Clanking and banging our gear on the walls as we moved, we trotted through the passages of the ship. As a unit centurion, I no longer had the task of babysitting recruits and regulars. I had non-coms to do that. Instead, I communicated with my adjuncts as I ran, telling them to get their platoons to the lifters on red deck pronto. At the same time, I listened into command chat, picking up what was going on with the whole legion. At my side was Natasha, to whom I'd given the task of monitoring shipboard data coming from gold deck.
"It's not good," Natasha told me. "They launched 5 missiles. It doesn't seem like much of an attack, but we haven't been able to take any of them down. They're punching through our countermeasures. Lasers are bouncing off. It looks like some kind of new reflective coating, and an aerogel shield surrounds them."
"Hmm," I said as we reached the main hatch on the lifter. "How long have we got before they deliver a payload?"
"About 7 minutes, but it could be less."
"How could it be less?"
"Not all missiles carry conventional fusion warheads."
I didn't really know what she was talking about, but I figured she did, and that was good enough for me.
"Okay, listen up," I said. "Since we're supposed to be the first group off the ship, we're supposed to load up last. Stand aside and let the other units board ahead of us."
A modern lifter held a full cohort, about 1,200 troops altogether, plus a lot of gear. It was able to carry more in a pinch, but the brass didn't like to overload them if it wasn't entirely necessary. We watched as 2 more units straggled in and boarded. There were 3 units aboard, plus mine, which was standing around outside on the dock. There was nothing else here other than a big pile of equipment for everyone. We took our portion and stood milling around. Beyond the lifter, I could see the stars outside. They caught my thoughts for a moment. From here, they didn't look threatening, but they were blazing nuclear furnaces when you got up close, chock full of radiation, too. Space was always deadly, no matter how peaceful it appeared to be from your viewpoint.
"What's the damn holdup?"
Harris finally shouted into my headset.
"Don't know," I admitted. "Is Graves aboard yet?"
"Yes, sir,"
Natasha told me. That's what I liked about her. She kept tabs on everything. If you weren't paying attention, she was. She functioned like the extra brains I'd somehow missed out on at birth.
"This is bullshit," Harris said.
"I second that motion," Toro added.
I glanced around, and they were all looking at me. I was getting an odd vibe. Could they be expecting me to take drastic action? Was there some particular thing they were hoping I'd order them to do so I would take the heat for it later? It seemed to me that they were. Instead of answering, I sniffed loudly and checked my tapper. "Invading a planet without breakfast," I said. "It just seems barbaric." Leeson sidled up to me. I couldn't recall ever having seen him do that before, at least not to me.
"Sir," he said in a low tone, using private tactical radio only, "let the next unit climb over our feet. This lifter might get orders to eject any second."
I shrugged.
If it does, I'm not going to be the one who wasn't where I was supposed to be. Not this time. I have been awarded new levels of responsibility, and I intend to behave accordingly. Leeson looked confused and a little pissed off. He'd always been a man who had a short temper.
What's gotten into you? He demanded. Since when have you followed a petty order to the letter when circumstances dictate you could get away with something else?
I shrugged. We stand until we're ordered to move, or until everyone else is aboard. He squinted at me suspiciously. Toro tapped his shoulder. She flashed me a look of disgust.
It's no good, adjunct, she said. I heard our centurion here is infatuated with these rogues.
What? Harris shouted. Are you kidding me? Centurion, did you bang one of those skinners down there already? I mean, seriously.
Heaving a sigh, I looked down at Natasha, who was quite red-faced. That told me all I needed to know. She'd apparently spread around some version of yesterday's events that was less than flattering.
Sorry, sir, she said. That was before last night. I misunderstood the situation, and others must have embellished upon what I said.
Gossip, I said, shaking my head. It's just too good to pass up. I couldn't be too mad at her. After all, there was some truth to the claims. I hadn't touched the scientist in question, but I did feel like slowing this invasion down a little in her favor. I wasn't in any kind of all-fired hurry to go down there and slaughter anyone. In fact, I'd been entertaining a highly treasonous line of thought over the last few minutes. If, just if, mind you, the transport was about to be blown to fragments, so what? We'd all be okay. Legion Varus would be revived back on Earth when the mission failure was reported. That sequence of events was about the only way I could think of that would allow the people on the planet below to keep breathing. And who knew? If these rogue research techs could trash an Earth Legion, maybe they could knock out the galactic ships that were reportedly in transit to Arcturus, too. Alas, my subtle plan of stonewalling was demolished by Graves.
McGill!
His voice boomed in my ear.
Yes, Primus.
My eyes darted around my team. Someone had ratted me out and kicked this upstairs. It could have been any of them or all of them. Only Harris was meeting my eyes, and he looked pissed. That didn't mean anything, as he almost always looked pissed.
What are you doing standing around on the ramp with your thumb up your butt?
Graves demanded.
Sir, I've been ordered to be the last unit to board.
You are the last unit, he shouted.
The others were knocked out.
What? How, sir?
Didn't you feel a strike just moments ago?
Graves demanded in my ear.
We didn't feel a thing, sir. Really? It must be the new dampeners. I guess they're working even better than expected, Centurion. Anyway, the enemy warheads got within 10,000 kilometers when we met them with kinetic countermeasures. Rather than being knocked out, their onboard AI must have set off their warheads.
Isn't that way too far off to affect us?
Normally, yes. But they were X-ray bombs, atomic-powered lasers. That kind of tech only works once, but that's good enough. Extremely powerful X-rays beamed through the ship with precision. Every trooper who was still in the hold, still inside their cubes, died within a short time.
My mouth dropped open. So that was it. The missiles hadn't been intending to knock out the ship. They'd been going for our troops.
How many did we lose, Primus? I asked. About 65%. Command Chat hasn't released any of this info yet, by the way, as we didn't want to cause a panic.
I snorted. A panic? There's no such thing in a Varus man's heart, sir.
Good to hear. Now, I'm sending some pigs loaded with extra gear. Every lifter has a revival machine aboard. They'll work nonstop to rebuild the Legion. But the fresh troops will need gear, and it's your unit's first mission to load the ship with everything you can in the next 10 minutes.
That's when I remembered there was a big pile of extra equipment in the lifter bay already. Battle suits, beamers, snap rifles, and rucksacks filled with every type of gear were stacked high. While I spoke to Graves, I pinwheeled one arm. Troops began grabbing the extra gear and rushing up the ramp. They vanished in the dark maw of the lifter. A pig came in with more, and we kept loading.
Take the first section, I ordered my men. Right here at the hatch.
To fit aboard as many troops as possible, a unit would normally press deeper into the rows of jump seats to the very back before sitting down. That way, the next load of troops wouldn't have to trip over boots and gear while coming aboard. Graves contacted me again several minutes later.
"Are you aboard yet?"
he asked.
"I can't see your unit cam online."